Now, moving on, and nearly 120 people have been killed in Gaza, while 8 have died in Israel as fighting between two sides continues. Israel assembled troops, thousands of them, at the border, with artillery being fired into Gaza yesterday. There are concerns that if it were to push inside, it would be a hugely significant escalation of this already worrying conflict. I'm joined on the line now by Eamon Meehan, a native of Kilmaley. You may know him from his time as director of Trokra. He is now a board member with SADACA, which is the Ireland-Palestine Alliance, and in that role gave evidence on this matter to the Foreign Affairs Committee earlier this week in the Iraq. This, Eamon, good morning to you.
Good morning, Gavin.
Thank you very much for joining us. You're following, obviously, these developments very closely. Just how concerned are you at the reports that are emanating from Gaza?
Yeah, very concerned. I mean, it's a horrible situation. As you say, 120 dead in Gaza, about 30 of those are children. You know, absolutely dreadful to think of, you know, those families bereaved and, you know, their children gone. Mm. 8 in Israel, including one Israeli child. So, I mean, there is a backstory to this. You know, this is just the latest iteration of this crisis situation in Gaza. And, you know, we need to find some way of resolving it ultimately. But it is important to say at the very start that the International Criminal Court is already looking very carefully at the Israeli army for their actions in a conflict in Gaza in 2014, and also looking very carefully at Hamas. And the prosecutor at the International Criminal Court has told us yesterday that she and her team are looking very carefully at what's happening there. The reality is, for both sides, indiscriminate attacks, firing rockets, missiles, bombs from planes, if they are indiscriminate and there is no care taken over the lives of innocent civilians, those are war crimes. So that's a fundamental, and it applies to the Army of Israel as much as to Hamas. But in Gaza, you have 2 million people locked into a tiny strip of land the size of about a quarter of County Clare. You know, for the last 15 years, no airport, no ports, no way out, no way in, surrounded by steel, by concrete and wire, and there's no economy there. The water is salty. The people are miserable. And if you lock 2 million people into a coastal enclave like that, keep them locked in with no possibility of ever escaping from it, the militants, the people with the weapons, with the bombs, are going to take control and they're going to use them. So just saying, as Israel does, you know, we have a right to defend ourselves, is absolutely the lowest common denominator and the most useless statement. We need to move beyond this and try to find a solution. And that solution means freeing up the situation for those unfortunate people locked inside in Gaza at the minute.
I know that Trokra does work in Palestine and supports efforts to support communities there. Did you ever, in your time at Trokra, get a chance to travel there?
Yeah, no, I've been to Gaza 3 times.
And how does it compare?
The last time I was at...
Sorry to cut across you. How does it compare with then some of the other places that you've been to, where obviously there may be humanitarian crises or people living in desperately poor conditions? I'm not looking for you to rank one or the other, but just how bad is the situation?
Yeah, it's bad. I mean, I was shocked the last time I was there, which is 2018, to see how bad the situation had come. People have almost no money. There are some remittances coming in from family members who work overseas in the States or in parts of Europe or the Middle East. The Gulf would be a place where quite a few people have family members. You know, you see donkeys and carts on the street. You know, that's what people are reduced to. 40 and 50 year old cars that are kept together by bits of wire, camels on the streets, you know. Bread is what people subsist on. It's just terrible. And the water is appalling. Like, you cannot drink the water. The aquifer is almost gone. The water, the salt water from the Mediterranean, is pouring in. And Israel says that, you know, it's that Gaza is a threat to its very existence. It isn't. The backstory to all of this is that Israel's strategy, since it occupied Gaza, the West Bank, and the Golan in 1967 has been to divide up the Palestinian territories, turn them into enclaves, separate them from each other so that there is no connection between them, take as much of the land as possible, and congregate the Palestinian people into as small a space in those enclaves as possible. Now, what you saw in Jerusalem over the last couple of weeks in a place called Sheikh Jarrah was attempts by Jewish extremists to throw out Palestinian families from the homes that they were given in 1948 when Israel was set up and they lost their homes in what is today Israel. And this has been festering for decades. And I think the patience of Palestinians has just absolutely come to an end, and they're not willing to take this anymore.
And I know you're not going to.
And then the whole thing blew up, and now you have Gaza as a result.
And I know you're not going to condone some of the violence that we have seen. You've explained perhaps the circumstances in which it has been bred from the Palestinian side. Because of the trenchant positions of both sides, which are understandable given the history. We are now in a situation where the prospect of this shelling becoming something more serious cannot be discounted. And I know President Biden talked about he was confident or he was hopeful that this would ease after a few days. But until there's a sign of that, there's certainly a sense that this matter is on a knife edge and that it's very precarious.
Yeah, it is on a knife edge. And the reality is the people who suffer most are civilians. Most of the people who have died in Gaza are civilians because the place is so tightly packed. There's 2 million in a strip of land, and you see the kind of houses they live in, these tower blocks. And it is impossible, no matter how surgically you say your air force, attacks these targets, you are going to kill innocent people. And when, as Hamas does, you throw rockets, made from bits of pipe and with fertilizer loaded, and you target a city, you're going to hit and kill innocent people. So that is the measure of it. But there is something for both sides in this, and that is why it keeps going. But I keep going back to the point that ultimately, until such time as the people of Gaza can breathe, can move, have an opportunity for some kind of a life, this is going to go on in cycle after cycle after cycle.
But where are the efforts to try and mediate between both sides? I mean, since probably the days of Bill Clinton, we haven't seen that from the US. I know that in some ways Arab countries have been brought in to act as intermediaries or go-betweens, perhaps. But they're lukewarm at best, those efforts.
Yeah, and it is difficult to get two warring groups to come to the table. So the Egyptians are trying, the Qataris, the Americans have sent some senior people to Jerusalem, and I know they have their own contacts with Hamas as well. But to be perfectly honest about it, the United States is part of the problem here, because a bit like a spoiled child, they have basically given Israel a complete free hand for the last 54 years since 1967, pretty much to do what they like. And as a result of that, you now have a situation where Israel literally believes that anything that is Palestinian belongs to Israel. And the Palestinians, squeeze them, put them into enclaves, take their land, it makes no difference. Even at the UN Security Council, where Ireland is now a member, the Irish ambassador, I could see from her tweets yesterday, her absolute frustration at the United States. They won't even allow a public debate within the Security Council chamber about what's happening in Israel and Palestine.
And why not?
It has to be secret. It has to be behind closed doors in case they would be embarrassed, in case other member countries of the Security Council will say things that the US might not be able to argue against and then in public would look foolish. So it has to be done behind closed doors. And their view is at the minute they're going to let Israel continue with the bombardment until such point as Netanyahu tells the Americans, right, we've done enough. I'm happy. And my political future is secure, so we're prepared to stop.
And are you how disappointed are you that that is the policy under the new Biden administration? President Trump was unashamedly pro-Israel and made a number of policy changes that were very supportive of Israel's policies. But they're not being reversed.
Well, actually, one very important thing which he did was to... Trump had put sanctions on the International Criminal Court chief prosecutor and her staff. Now, Biden, when he got into office, he lifted those sanctions, which was a very positive thing. And the International Criminal Court is going to be very important in terms of how this plays out over the next few years. But I think Biden was taken unawares. I think this exploded unexpectedly. I think eventually Biden and his team would have turned their attention to the Middle East, but it certainly wasn't top of their list of priorities.
Of course.
But, you know, when you hear Leo Varadkar, you know, not known for his kind of extreme language, saying in the Dáil yesterday, you know, annexation, expulsion, plantation, the killing of civilians, whether it's deliberately or recklessly, it's not what you expect from a civilized democratic state like Israel. He had words as well, equally for Hamas and, you know, their how they treat their own people. But I think, you know, to some extent, we are seeing a situation where the narrative and the dynamic is changing. Actually, the most, well, interesting is the wrong word, but the most, the new element in all of this, which we haven't seen before, is rioting in Israeli cities where about 20% of the population are Palestinian. And that rioting is taking place because, again, Israel has tried to fragment all of these to keep Palestinians in specific parts of these cities, not invest in their communities. Services are miserable in Palestinian communities in those Israeli cities. So you have, if you like, it is a Palestinian renewal and a reemergence of a Palestinian struggle. Where it goes, I don't know, but I think there is a young movement in Palestine now. They are sick to the teeth of Mahmoud Abbas and the Palestinian Authority. You know, he's in his 80s, you know.
Yeah.
He just doesn't cut it for young Palestinians anymore. And like 50% of the Palestinian population, they're under 25 and they're not going to put up with that. And, you know, unless the international community and the US in particular decides, right, there are two sides here and Palestinians have rights and they are entitled to their space and to their country and to their freedoms and their land. Until the Americans decide that and sit down with the Israelis and say, look, you've had enough, you've taken enough.
And what about,
it's very hard to see where it's going to go.
What about the role of the countries that are supporting the likes of Hamas? I mean, they're getting their arms and getting their ammunition from somewhere.
Yeah. Well, they used to get, if you like, manufactured weapons from Hezbollah in Lebanon, and also from Iran. Now, what Israel has done quite effectively over recent years, and Egypt as well, is cut off the tunnels through Egypt and the Sinai in particular, where these weapons were coming in. But, you know, human ingenuity is endless. And if you've got metal piping, you know, you've got fertilizer, and it is impossible, no matter how tightly you try to seal a space like Gaza, to actually prevent, in the dead of night, small boats coming in, tunnels. You know, there are ways of doing these things. And it is just impossible to provide an environment where Hamas does not have access to weaponry. And they will continue to use it until, as I say, there is a real effort to look at the root causes here. Otherwise, this cycle will continue again and again. We'll be here in 2-5 years' time again.
And I'd agree absolutely with that. Whatever happens in this skirmish for now, whether it escalates or not, the problems aren't going to be addressed. I'll just put it to you finally, though, based on the analysis you've given us already, Eamon, not much prospect in the short term. Maybe this particular episode does spark change, but for now there seems to be very little prospect of there being a real substantive focus and change on this issue.
Yeah, You've got a very elderly leadership in the West Bank, in Ramallah, the Palestinian leadership, and I think they're out of ideas. In Israel, over the last 10 years, politics has become extreme and it has moved dramatically to the right. And Netanyahu, in order to stay in power, has built up a support base from extremist parties. They hate Palestinians. You know, they run through the streets chanting death to Arabs, all of that kind of stuff. So there is very little prospect within the political system in Israel that I can see at the minute of a reaching out to Palestinians. It's very polarized and it's very dangerous.
And that's on the other side as well. And you know, when you have two...
It's on both sides.
Two peoples who have been at loggerheads for so long, that's going to be the case. A worrying time then?
50% of... Yeah, I was just going to say 50% of the people between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean are Jewish Israelis and 50% are Palestinians.
Yeah.
But in terms of resources and land and all of that, it's not equally divided. And until such time as it is, this is not going to be resolved.
Eamon, appreciate your time and your explanation as to what's happening on the ground and your experiences thereof as well. Thanks very much for joining us on the programme. Much appreciated.
Thanks, Gavin.
Do take care. Eamon Meehan there, and he's a member of SADACA, the Irish, the board member, excuse me, of SADACA, the Ireland-Palestine Alliance.